Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour. It is May 25th, 2017. Wow, time flies when you're having fun. Tonight's main science topic, real Star Wars. Now, if you think you know about Star Wars, this is going to be shocking to some of you. I'll be talking about real Star Wars weapons, and we think of, you know, directed energy and lasers and, you know, all kinds of things in outer space. But when you find out what the real Star Wars weapons are like, I think you're going to be surprised. And actually, a lot of these types of weapons have been used in Earth-type military scenarios in the past. So that's tonight's main science topic. First of all, last week's show, I feel, was very important. I have to apologize. I've been a little late in getting up postings on my webpage over the past week. I've been busy, was diverted with some issues, all good. But so anyway, I'll try and make up for that this week with a lot of pictures, a lot of postings, a lot of commentary, etc. Hanford, Washington nuclear accident. Now, this has been in the alternative media. Just want to let you know what's going on here, as much as we know anyway. The whole area has been cordoned off. Hanford, Washington, southeast of Seattle, in the state of Washington. World War II site where the uranium was processed for the bomb program, for the Manhattan Project, and also St. Louis, Missouri area also used, but Hanford, Washington has been the site of, was the first nuclear reactor for electricity in the United States. It is used as a site for storing nuclear waste, including heavy water, in these big underground double-walled containers. About a week ago, they had a collapse of one of the tunnels that is housing nuclear waste. Allegedly, there was a release of nuclear material into the atmosphere. We don't know how bad it is. We know they have basically thrown everybody out of there, have blocked it from access. But then a second story just hit the press, and they were talking about one of the big tanks, liquid double-wall tanks, that are used to hold the heavy water waste from many of the reactors around the country. And one of these is leaking into the environment. Now, these are horrendous problems. I'll be just frank with you. We have to shut down the U.S. nuclear program right away. We cannot continue on this policy of self-destruction. And this is a self-destruction. This is different than any kind of material that's ever been, the Earth has ever been exposed to before, because it's not going to recover for, in many cases, tens, even hundreds of thousands of years. And biological systems cannot sustain in a nuclear environment. So, number one, we have to shut down the nuclear program. Number two, determine the severity of leakage at all of these sites, about 104 in the United States. Include in that the many sites that have been used for nuclear processing, the storage of nuclear waste, and also the military programs that have been horrendous polluters, tremendous polluters over the decades since World War II, then decide on how to clean them up and go about cleaning them up. Leaving this stored on planet Earth is not an option. And once I gave a talk on how many launches, given the largest rockets that we have today, to put this material into outer space, and people say, oh, let's just shoot it into outer space. Well, there's the problem of with that many flights, you're going to have some that won't make it. What do we do with those? How do we get this stuff back to Earth? We just can't let it fall in the ocean. The military has been dumping nuclear waste down in the deep crevices of oceans. How do we get that back? How do we get that out of there? But trying to send it into space is literally an impossible venture at this point because of the quantity that's been produced. And given the largest rockets that we have today, it would be literally beyond the physical means of the world to launch this material into space, let alone all the material that is being generated every day in nuclear reactors in the United States and around the world. So we have a horrendous problem that has been ignored by Congress, that has been ignored by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the AEC, the Atomic Energy Commission, and the United Nations has a team. All of this has been ignored. It's time that the piper is going to be paid, and there is really no way to neutralize nuclear material because the atoms themselves are giving off radioactive particles, radioactive radiation, and there's simply no way to stop this. So people have come up with some ideas, and oh, there's a plant that eats nuclear waste. No. Excuse me. There's no way to deal with this other than time, and we really don't have time. To try and stick it at Yucca Mountain is not a solution because eventually these casks are going to break open. They have to be cooled. All of the recent nuclear fuel that's been used has to be cooled on an ongoing basis. So where do we get the energy for that? If we have an infrastructure outage on planet Earth, then how do we continue to cool this material? It's a devastating problem. Google, Apple, Amazon, Boeing, many other companies are getting into what are known as cloud platforms. In other words, they're creating the routers, the servers, etc., all of the services that one needs to put your business in the cloud, so to speak. So you don't even know where your software is contained, where your sensitive data is contained, and you trust that all of this will be kept as a vital secret. But we just see, for example, Sabre Corporation Hospitality Group, for example, this sent in by a listener, vast amounts of information breached, and this is used for making online reservations. A large percentage of the online reservations go through Sabre Corporation Hospitality Group. They have been compromised, and this is just an example of ongoing large-scale data systems being compromised. And when I wrote my book a number of years ago now, Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit, I said that you're going to see this, and that's what you're seeing, because the NSA will not allow real encryption to be sold in the market. They keep the requirement that these software companies that build encryption systems give the backdoor information to the NSA, then that leaks into the hacker world, and this is what you get. There's no reason for any of this going on. But here's the problem. Here's a further problem. The cloud platforms that a lot of corporations are going to, because they don't have to have an IT department, they don't have to have the computers, all of the upkeep, etc., is all done in the cloud, done for them. And it's an economic decision that a lot of corporations have to go to. But the other decision is, are they going to be able to keep their independence, their autonomous relationship between them and their data? The other problem is that platforms like WordPress or other platforms are becoming much more difficult to maintain. And even with many of these, the shopping carts are cloud-based platforms where you have your product base in a cloud-based platform. And by the way, I do not have any of this. I maintain my own web pages, but it's getting harder and harder because the servicing of the software that you use to maintain your web page is getting less and less reliable. So what I do is I basically lock my web page into a certain state and then I keep it there for a long period of time, trying to make as few changes as possible. But then you're met with the problem that outfits like Google, who, you know, the world's biggest search engine, database engine with SEO, where you have the evaluation of your web page, how many hits are you going to get from raw organic traffic, etc. It becomes more and more difficult for the person simply to be independent out there. They're forcing everybody into a corner relative to database management in your business. This is a very problematic situation because Google is owned by the CIA. There's a lot of political, let's say, ramifications. Say you have a business and say you're a business that supports radio or television, then you're going to be forced to be politically correct and agree with a given agenda. And if you don't, guess what? The hits that you get will be limited. Your SEO scores, the availability of traffic to your website can be blocked. And if you have your database in a managed cloud-based system, you can be prevented from getting that data. And I have seen this where people who are, let's say, politically incorrect according to the norms of Google or some big outfits like GoDaddy or some, you know, these giant corporations that house all of this material. I don't deal with any of these. And I'll tell you, it's really a tightrope when you're dealing with you know, anything, whether you have these vast corporations in charge. So I try and keep my business small and local. In that way, I can see it. I can go out and touch it. I know where it is instead of cloud-based. So this cloud-based thing is going to come back and bite people in the behind big time. But the problem is you're going to find a lot of corporations who just very silently go along with the designated politically correct venue, and they can do this to their employees also. Their employees will be monitored, scrutinized, and held to a different standard, and it'll be sometimes people will lose their jobs. Maybe they'll get bad reviews if they have political beliefs in certain direction because it's not commensurate with the corporate attitude, which is based on cloud-based data acquisition. By the way, we see news in the news media which succumbs to this. For example, right now they're pressuring a guy named Sean Hannity, who's on Fox News, to not cover a story regarding a guy named Seth Rich who was killed in the streets of Washington, D.C. about a year ago. They're pressuring him by trying to cut out his sponsors from covering a murder story. And clearly it's related to this guy worked for the DNC. And it turns out he was leaking information, the DNC emails, to WikiLeaks. And I covered this a bit on John Moore's show yesterday, so I don't want to go through this whole narrative again. Listen to John Moore's show Wednesday morning, the 24th of May, first hour, and you'll hear me go through this narrative. But Sean Hannity is being pressured not to cover this story, and they're trying to affect his sponsors. Now, this is the kind of thing that's going to happen if people have cloud-based data systems, and lots of corporations, lots of smaller people are going into this thinking it's the way to go. And I'll tell you, it's a sheep in a wolf in sheep's clothing. It looks so nice. You know, you don't have all of this overhead and maintenance. And I put a lot of time every week into maintaining my websites, etc. But I'll tell you something, it's worth it because I have control of this. And someday there'll be people out there. That's why I keep my shortwave show, because there could be a day when the internet is just totally controlled and the only real information you are going to get is on a shortwave radio. the only place where alternative media can actually survive, as it has done for decades, on shortwave radio. So I recommend you all get a shortwave radio. Make sure it goes down into the bands. My wintertime frequency is 5070, so make sure you get the lower bands that cover those frequencies, and maybe even down lower down. Make sure you get the full range of, say, 5 megahertz, and then, of course, upwards. But just a quick comment about the entire blackout on this Seth Rich issue. He's killed. He was shot in the street. It was not a robbery. They've labeled it as a robbery and left it that way. The D.C. Police Department have been told to stand down, and it turns out the FBI has been holding his laptop, which shows all of the transfers of emails to WikiLeaks. So this entire narrative of the Russians hacking the DNC, totally false, and they're covering up the murder of this guy who is actually leaking. This is something that Julian Assange alluded to and actually used his name back in July of 2016 when talking about the dangers of people who are leaking material to WikiLeaks. And so, but a complete blacklisting, blackout of this information to the public. So very clearly, in the story also is that Seth Rich did not die from the gunshot wounds. He had been operated on in the hospital. He was recovering. He was conscious, and an hour later, he is dead. So as this scenario continues, then it would turn out, if this is true, that James Comey, the head of the FBI, was sitting on the laptop while creating this false narrative of the Russian investigation and going on and on and on. And let me tell you, the Washington viper pit is really deep. And I'll tell you, I would not have anything to do with any of these people. The list of dead people or ruined careers that trailed these people that hover around Washington for their power, for their personal earthly gain, is just, yeah, it's beyond the pale. Just a quick comment in the movie Noah regarding with Russell Crowe, the recent movie. I thought it was a wonderful movie and depicted Noah, etc. Remember in my paid cast a number of weeks ago, in the ongoing series, The World Before the Great Flood, I had a paid cast which was dedicated to how Noah built the ark, literally. I mean, how did he construct it? What kind of materials? What was the... I actually have a boat design there, which shows you how the boat would have been built, etc., and how he would have operated it with sea anchors, etc. But in the movie, they have these rock monsters, and as the people are trying to charge the ark as it begins to rain, and the water comes up out of the ground. And, of course, that's due to the fact that, and I've seen this, if you have a lot of rain in this, then the ground pressure gets very powerful in certain areas. It goes through, there's actually little roots, paths through the ground where the water could pass, and then comes shooting up out of the ground. And that was very realistic when the floodwaters came, because it started to rain, and 40 days and 40 nights of rain. But they had these rock monsters whacking the people from coming and getting into the ark and saving Noah. And I thought, you know, this doesn't have a place in the Bible. But apparently this was alluding to, this is pretty far-fetched, but anyway, this is, somebody had sent this in, that this was related to the book of Enoch, where the an alien race came and supposedly combined with the women of men and or the women on Earth and created a giant race, etc., and was related to this. But I still, the rock people, really, I don't see that. I don't see that myself. That's really a stretch. Next story, China First. The China Geological Survey extracted methane hydrate from the South China Sea. It is said that a cubic meter of methane hydrate will contain 16 meters of methane gas. And this is the first time this has ever been accomplished. They show them burning the methane off the bow of the ship, but there's tremendous, tremendous amounts of methane hydrate on the ocean floor all over the world. And so anyway, this is said to be a quantity of energy that would dwarf oil, coal, and natural gas combined in a readily available source of energy. So anyway, but the problem is, if we burn all of this, we will simply use up all the oxygen in the atmosphere and we'll all be dead, so we won't need energy. Maybe that's the solution. Hey, good plan. I once calculated if you burned all of the oil, the tar oil that's in the Orinoco region of Venezuela, that it would consume all of the oxygen on Earth. So clearly not a good plan. Clearly we have to get away from these forms of burning fuel, and that's a myth. I enumerate this in my book, McCanny Wing Generator World Energy Project. I enumerate the issue of burning high energy content fuels. It's not a good way to get energy. Albert Einstein quoted once as saying, using nuclear fuel to heat your water for coffee is not a good plan. Basically, nuclear energy is not a good way to get your energy. Just a quick mention, there have been announcements in the news about magnetic bridges between the galaxies and also dark matter bridges between galaxies. First, let me talk about the so-called dark matter. There's more and more hype about dark matter. I saw a story that, it wasn't that much of an effect in the early universe, but it's more an effect now. Meaning that the gravitational effects of dark matter were less in the early universe, in this Big Bang scenario. But this just is an example of the goofy science coming out of standard science these days. In my model of the universe, there's no need for dark matter. I cured that problem with my earliest peer-reviewed published papers dealing with the formation of galaxies. And now these bridges, so-called bridges of dark matter, what they're seeing actually is a bending of light. In other words, a lensing effect where the bridges connect between two galaxies. And so they're saying, there must be matter there, but we can't see matter. And what it literally is the electric fields in that region that are associated with the electric current flows, primarily electrons. And so anyway, that's the lensing effect, the induced electric dipole redshift, the concept I developed. And that's what is going on. So once again, standard science, depending on dark matter, which doesn't exist, but they've actually measured, and this is actually interesting, they've measured magnetic fields. And these are legitimate measurements. Typically, they use what is known as the Zeeman effect. It's a physics effect where you can determine the strength of the magnetic field by line splitting. And so with very sensitive equipment, you can map the magnetic field. They use this for the sun. They use this in the laboratory. It's a very well-known effect. And so when the magnetic field line splitting occurs for different elements, then you can tell the strength of magnetic field. So they've measured magnetic fields now connecting two galaxies. But then where that should be applied is to what are known as ARP galaxies. These are galaxies that have different redshifts, or it could be a quasar in a galaxy that have very different redshifts, but are physically, visibly connected in many regions of the electromagnetic spectrum. So they'll have infrared, radio, X-rays, the whole gamut of electromagnetic radiation connecting with these strings that show the two galaxies or a galaxy and a quasar connecting. And this is literally the discharge, the plasma discharge of the region around the galaxy because of the proton-supported wind. It's the same situation as in the solar system. So at any rate, some science that should be done, but now they're able to measure these ultra-sensitive, ultra-weak magnetic fields in outer space. So that'll be a field that should be applied to the Arp galaxy, showing that there's a magnetic connection. And in fact, that's just another form of measurement to illustrate the electrical connection between galaxies and quasars, galaxies and galaxies, etc. Along a similar note, the Cassini mission is reaching the end of its lifetime before they crash it into Saturn. And with the crossing of the ring plane, a listener wrote in and said, what's going on here? The contact with the spacecraft was lost for about 20 minutes. And so anyway, what's going on there is it was involved in the discharge. That whole ring plane is ripe with electrical discharges. So clearly the spacecraft got caught up in these electrical discharges and was basically out of communication for that period of time. That has been seen before. And by the way, these spacecraft, as it orbits Saturn, would be a perfect test for the induced electric dipole redshift, where the redshift based on the electric non-uniform electric field around Saturn should be causing the redshift to be varying as this spacecraft goes around Saturn. But of course, you'll never hear that from NASA, and many times they're seeing things in their data they don't understand, so they just don't even talk about them. And they, you know, it doesn't fit into their model of the real world. At any rate, just to make note of that. What else in the notes? This week's paid cast is the ongoing series Cosmos, The Real Story. It will be the continuation. I think we're around episode 10 right now, and there's going to be probably 15. So this is going to continue on into August. Last week's paid cast, and by the way, I'm sorry it took me a number of days to get that posted. It is now there, was on electric properties of coils and Schmidt triggers in the ongoing Tesla's Mind series. So I was talking about Tesla towers, Tesla coils, tune frequency, dielectric constants, capacitors, Schmidt triggers, and the coils and how they're coupled, etc. So a very interesting show. And by the way, that's for everybody from trained scientists to the general public to get an understanding of what Tesla was doing. And how what he was really doing, and not what the the fake media, the fake science news, tries to portray what he was doing. And by the way, that is on my list of things to do. I promised before I'd be listing the fake science news sites on my webpage, and I still have that as a note in my pile of notes. Many things to do here, but just go down the laundry list of. You know, to start with, the JPL and the Goddard announcements, a lot of them come through the BBC or Science Magazine or Nature Magazine. National Geographic is one of the worst fake science news sites, although they have wonderful pictures and wonderful travel stories, etc. When it comes to science, especially space science, it's really garbage. Pure NASA baloney. But I will be posting that, and on my webpage, keep an eye out for that. Another announcement here, a 130,000-year-old human site discovered north of San Diego. Now, this actually was discovered in 1992. I bet you haven't heard about it. They probably haven't talked about this in your in your classroom when you were in grade school or whatever. But They were digging a highway site north of San Diego and found this basic human remains, and they used radioactive dating processes to date it to 130,000 years old. And of course, I always am very skeptical of those dating processes, but there may be a bit of value to that. At any rate, the claim is that this is a 130,000-year-old human site and has been in the news recently. You may want to take a look at that, do a search and a little reading on that. Whenever they have these, I really, what if this guy or some people were working at the nuclear plant out in north of San Diego and were full of radiation and it skews they're, maybe 20, 30 years old, the graves, and they date them back to 130,000 years. I don't know. Things are so crazy out there. You may hear a little bit of noise in the background here, a little bit of construction going on nearby, so out of my control. Just a quick comment on this term that you're hearing more and more and more that gets belabored by the lamestream media, deep state or shadow government. What does that really mean? It's a term that really is deceptive in its very nature. And it's a term that you can, if you talk about the one world government or the globalists or all these other terms, I call them the Alex Jones terms because those are the ones he always uses. But it really does not get to the heart of the matter. And I've seen people go through all kinds of technical explanations of who's running the deep state and who's the deep state. Some people think that Hillary Clinton is the deep state. No, she's a pawn. She's a lackey, just like Bill was, just like the Bushes, just like Podesta, just like anybody that you see their name. If you see their name, the rule is, my rule, is that they don't count. They're just clogs in the wheel, and they get their earthly benefit. They get to do whatever they want. Billy Clinton, could do cocaine in the White House and have women there on a constant basis. And why didn't Hillary care? Because she was biding her time for the time that would be her turn in her term, in her terms, in her words, her turn to be president. Her turn. It was her turn. Like you're playing bat and ball, or, ball as the kid, and it's my turn to bat now. It's like her turn to be president. She put in her dues, she put in her time, put up with Billy, and didn't get to be president. Wow. But anyway, no, they're not the deep state. And the deep state really amounts to the people who are doing the bidding of the world bankers. It's as simple as that. You get up to the Rothschilds, the Rothschild banking empire, under which comes the Rockefellers in New York. The Rockefellers are the New York branch of the J.P. Morgans and the Chases and all the families, etc., that are running the New York banks, are subordinate to the Rothschild banking empire, which is worldwide. So you have the Bolsheviks in Russia, which were subservient to the Rothschild banking empire, etc. But when you get up, the term Rothschild means red shield. It was the blocking shield of the Vatican Bank. That's what it is. And that's where it ends, because the riches that came back from the New World during the Middle Ages, after Columbus discovered the New World, and they started raping and pillaging, and literally that's when it opened up the seas for the entire worldwide invasion and raping and pillaging of gold, of especially minerals that had been accumulated around the world, England, Spain, etc. All that money came back to the Catholic Church, who controlled the governments of Spain and England, who designated who would marry who and who would be in war with who and what wars would begin and end, etc. You find these 100-year wars going on. And that was all banker controlled, just like everything that's going on now. And that's why Trump better have a big army of people around him, because he's trying to, and he's probably going to succeed in actually bringing all of these Arab and the Jewish countries and the Muslim countries together in the Mideast and creating a peace pact. He's doing it right now. And that was my estimate for why the bombing in Manchester, England happened, was to take away the front page news from what Trump was doing. They'll do anything to block notoriety of what this guy is doing. But that also stops literally centuries of planned and constructed warfare in these countries. So it's not good for business for the bankers to have somebody coming in and making peace. That's why no president in the past has ever been able to do it. Every president comes in going, I want peace in the Middle East. Well, I'll tell you something. The people on the very top, the nameless people in the Rothschild banking, in the Jesuit banking community that works out of the Vatican, they don't want peace. World peace is not on their table, not on their agenda. So anyway, who is the deep state in Washington? These are the minions who do the bidding because they've been compromised with pedophilia, with other types of crimes that they've been caught up in their lives will be destroyed if they don't play ball and follow the agendas that are set out for them. So that's, in a sense, what the deep state is, but they don't run anything. They just follow orders, just like Obama read teleprompters. People talk about, oh, Obama was radicalized and that's why he did what he did. Obama didn't do anything. He played golf and sandlot basketball and read from a teleprompter. He was no more president than I was. Get it straight. Figure out who's who, who's running what, and who's a pawn. Obama wasn't president. But finally, you got somebody in there who's actually becoming president. And that's why it's very dangerous for Trump. And I suspect he knows that. He was a kid, just like I was, when John Kennedy got blown away for thinking he was going to be president and run things. Wow. On to the main science topic, the real Star Wars. Now, this is going to shock a lot of people because, remember, back in the Reagan years, we had the Star Wars program, in which massive, massive amounts of money went into basically space-based weaponry, high-tech weaponry, defensive weaponry against missile attacks, etc. A lot of it failed. And, of course, we saw the failure of this during the first Gulf War under George Herbert Walker Bush. The equipment simply did not work. But the space-based, let me go into why I'm talking about this. Recently, the military came out, the U.S. military, and they said, hey, it's getting really easy for anybody to get into outer space. Well, hey, let me tell you something. It's always been easy to get into outer space. There was just this mental shield that NASA had built around everybody, kind of like the old flat Earth, that if you sailed off to the edge of the Earth, you would fall off and you'd be consumed by fire-eating dragons, fire-breathing dragons. And so everybody thought that. The commoners in Columbus's ship, they thought this is, hey, they were in a storm, probably a hurricane even, and they were being blown around, and they wanted to go back. And Columbus goes, no, 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 this is just a storm. And they thought that they had reached the end of the world and they were going to fall off and all die. And that was the mentality of the commoners back then. And, of course, just a quick comment, you can measure the diameter of the Earth, the radius of the Earth, the circumference of the Earth. Just like in the room you're sitting in right now listening to this, you can measure with a yardstick. You can measure the circumference of the Earth. There's many ways to do it. It's not a debatable issue. It's about a 30-second discussion to explain how to do this. And I've explained it on my webpage, on other radio shows. So all of this flat Earth baloney is just disinformation, more disinformation. But the point is that the idea that space is difficult to get to is pure myth, absolutely mythology. Because I've been in the space regions of the space program. I was very familiar with the Russian space program. In the early 1980s, I went to Los Angeles and to the military meetings, talked at the 19th International Electric Propulsion Conference as an invited speaker at the Air Space America Air Show in San Diego in closed sessions, presenting my electromagnetic propulsion systems, etc., all of which basically were absconded into black ops programs in California, etc. But the point is that going into space is really, really easy. It's not hard to do. But right now, people are actually doing it with the advent of Burt Rutan and the SpaceX and other companies. But there's a guy, this was the clincher, there's a guy in Italy who's been building high-altitude balloons, and they go up like 50 miles to almost to the edge of space. And he can float these things around, take pictures. And so the military is finally saying, hey, look, any Tom, Dick, or Harry can get into space now. And we don't control it. So we better militarize outer space, even though the militarization of outer space was banned back in the 60s. There were international accords to not militarize outer space. But given that, and the fact that you have the sun up there, you have an immense, immense amounts of energy flowing through outer space that you can tap into. You have the not well-known, my work, which describes the discharge of the solar capacitor, etc. But there just the solar energy alone that is available in outer space, and you can make big mirrors, you can make big reflectors, and I mean, this is nothing new. James Bond movie is built on this theme where this rogue group of people, you know, Dr. Goofy and his son create this immense mirror in space, and they're going to burn, you know, the Earth and cause chaos, etc. It's always the same story. But I love James Bond movies. I mean, I'm a James Bond fan. I always love when new James Bond movies come out. The cars and the Casino Royale and the scenery, etc. So they're good. But the idea of space weapons, we have Tesla weapons, we have directed energy weapons, we have laser beams now that are tremendously powerful. They can manipulate storms on Earth, etc., with laser beams, technology that I was instrumental in designing and building and implementing. The only problem is it was absconded by the U.S. military and used to create horrendous storms and destruction like Katrina. But anyway, let's go into outer space and look at some of the realities. And China was on the forefront of this. They built basically an offensive weapon, and it amounted to what you might call an outer space shotgun. If you release at a high velocity just a barrage of shrapnel, in other words, these could be very small pellets, just like literally like a shotgun pellets, and you release them at a target, there's no defense for any of this. I don't care what kind of spacecraft you build, what kind of shielding you put up. You're not going to stop little steel particles coming at, if you're in opposite orbits, if you're moving in opposite directions at low Earth orbit. We're talking about a crossing speed at a velocity of about 34,000 miles an hour. It's 17,000 miles an hour in one direction plus 17,000 miles an hour in the other direction. So two objects meeting in outer space that are in opposite direction, their orbits are in opposite directions, they're meeting at around 34,000 miles per hour. Nothing is going to withstand this type of beating. Now, you could try, say, directed energy. Let's take the great example, directed energy weapons. Say you have a solar collector, you change this into electricity, you build up capacitors, and you have a directed energy weapon. Okay, well, that might be effective. It could be directed at a target. But let me talk about radiation hardening, something I was involved in my career in telecommunications, etc. When you radiation harden electronics, you typically make the gates in the transistors. Now, these are integrated circuit boards with the patterns being built up of artwork, it's called. Basically, the patterns and then the copper connectors, the wires, etc., are all laid out on a circuit board. But in the transistors themselves, if they are hit by X-rays or other forms of, say, directed energy, electromagnetic radiation, the bridges in the gates in the transistors can be shorted out. And so the way you defend against this is you simply make them bigger. So the miniaturization and is done away with in hardening, radiation hardening, rad hardening electronics for outer space. And it's not only directed weapons. You could have high energy particles from the sun. You have electric charging of the spacecraft, which causes high energy particles to come zipping in, crashing into the spacecraft. So you have all of these serious radiation environmental hazards for electronics in outer space. So that would be one way of destroying a satellite, is hitting it repeatedly with directed energy, breaking down the electronics in the system, and eventually it would become dysfunctional because the circuitry simply doesn't work. But that's a pretty sophisticated system. There's a tremendous amount of development. It may not work. There may be defenses. There could be shielding that could be used against it to prevent the spacecraft from being affected by directed energy or EMF type of blasts. Another one would be blowing off a nuclear bomb in outer space, where you would basically, the radiation blast coming off the bomb would do the same thing. It would eradicate the electronics on the spacecraft and therefore render it useless. But back to the real Star Wars. Now, back in the old, when wars were fought hand-to-hand combat, people got a little bit more sophisticated, and they had all kinds of weapons that throw through projectiles. Some of them would be balls of twine wrapped up and soaked in oil. Then they'd light them on fire. There's a scene in the movie Troy with Brad Pitt, and they have these big balls that roll down, and then they explode and burn the ships that were on the coastline, etc. But so that's a form of primitive weapon, very effective, because there's nothing you can do when that thing's rolling down the hill at you. There's no way to stop it. If somebody gets in the way, it's just going to bowl them over and keep going. So I guess the best thing to do is simply get out of the way. With a directed kinetic energy weapon, offensive weapon, you can literally take out any spacecraft in outer space. And so that's one of the very simple Star Wars weapons that you would see in outer space. It's very simple. Anybody can do it. It could be done by, say, terrorists or a group of kids just out to have a good time, direct some satellites and, just some good old boy down-home fun, building a satellite that goes up and searches out other satellites and destroys them just for kicks. And it'd be very, very inexpensive. If you can get material into outer space, you basically can do this. There are very limited lanes in which the space shuttle moves, for example. It doesn't move anywhere anymore. But a spacecraft that come out of, say, Cape Kennedy in Florida, or the European launch site in South America, these typically have very specific orbital lanes, you might call them, where the satellites or the projectiles, the payloads move when they're launched from these certain areas. So to oppose them, in other words, to get a directed kinetic energy weapon moving in the opposite direction, is very easy, and it's very difficult for these heavy satellites to move out of their designated orbits, and certainly they don't move quickly. So a directed energy weapon would be something that you would probably be able to use very effectively, get the satellites up to where they're almost meeting, and then send out a blast of these steel balls, for example, and there's no satellite on the planet or orbiting the planet that is going to withstand a direct hit like that. Let's look at the mirrors. Now, you have the sun. You can make a mirror out of mylar or other reflecting materials. Very lightweight, very easy to expand in outer space and control a shape. These things have been done, so this is not rocket science. But basically, here's, in fact, a weapon that I talked about. Where was it? I was on a show a week or two ago. I was a guest. I was talking about this. That if, say, an army, the most advanced army military equipment, was marching across the desert, and you were, say, almost defenseless, women, children, and unarmed men, simply, what would be a weapon that these unarmed people could use to counter any oncoming army? Well, it turns out that if they could all go to the local Walmart store and buy mirrors, if you could take 1,000 people, men, women, children, and give them a, you know, a bathroom-sized mirror, one that you can hold in your hands, and then direct the sunlight at the oncoming army, there's no army equipment, there's no tank, there's no armored personnel carrier that could withstand the amount of heat that you would be directing on these objects. And in fact, that is an, there's an indicator that says that that's what the ancient Atlanteans used, was a form of directed energy. Now, can you make a laser? Well, it's very easy to make a laser once you know how to do it. Or a directed energy beam, or a light that's focused and puts a lot of energy on a given area. So the Atlanteans clearly had the ability to use glass, metallurgy, and the combination of the two. And with that, you can make all kinds of military weapons. You can have lamps. You can have, you know, Tesla had the mercury vapor lamps, etc. But this is not about Atlantis. This is about modern space warfare. So the two simplest, least expensive, most rudimentary, most fundamental, cheapest weapons are the most effective. And say that a defense system is able to withstand the first barrage or something, you know, you're simply not going to withstand the amount of energy that can be directed at with just kinetic energy weapons, directed like ball bearings coming at you at 34,000 miles an hour, or solar light reflected off a mirror in outer space. The larger the mirror, let's just take a look at something. If you go out in your backyard and you take a lens, in fact, by the way, John Moore always has a prepper tip of the day. Here's a prepper tip. I carry a magnifying glass with me, and it's got like a little magnifying glass in the corner that you can magnify much larger. I also carry one of these kids' bug examination lenses that you put something in. It's got a grid work, and it's got a lens, a very good magnifying lens on the top, and you can, and it's for examining rocks if I find rocks or other specimens, little animals or bugs or whatever I find that I'm when I'm traveling. But a lens is simply a magnifying lens. And if you have one about, oh, say, 4 inches in diameter, that's enough to start a fire in 5 seconds using the sun. In fact, there's a survivalist technique where you take ice and you form it into the shape of a lens, and you can actually start a fire with a lens made out of clear ice. But a small lens, 4 inches in diameter, focused on a piece of, what I don't care what it is. If it's metal, you can literally burn a hole through a piece of metal if you have a 4-inch lens. Now let's take something that's a reflector a couple miles across. And you're taking, you know, in diameter, let's say, You're taking all that solar energy and you're directing it on something. That there's nothing that's going to withstand that amount of energy, because there are flaws in everything, and it's the flaws. I say that you had a, for your defensive satellite shield, you had a perfect mirror. Well, there's no such thing as a perfect mirror, because eventually there's going to be a flaw in there of some kind, an impurity. And when that piece of impurity starts to heat up, then it'll burn a hole in that, and eventually the whole thing is going to come apart because you've broken down the chink in the armor, so to speak. So the real Star Wars, you can go out and pay all the money you want, have all the aerospace corporations on the planet developing all kinds of sophisticated defensive weapons and offensive weapons. But the most potentially dangerous, harmful weapons are still the simplest. The kinetic energy weapon, the directed kinetic energy weapon, and the mirrors in outer space. And literally, with those two weapons, you could obliterate any opposing army that might come at you. So, this is the point I wanted to get at. It was that when we think of Star Wars, we think of all of this complicated development, etc. But it, in reality, the most effective outer space weapons are the simplest. Remember that Benjamin Franklin wanted the longbow to be the weapon of choice in the U.S. militia after the formation of the United States. The reason being that the muskets, the single shot, they were hard to load. If it was in the rain, your powder could get wet. They were not effective in the wet conditions, which was common in New England and the United States. The entire eastern United States is wet. If it was a rainy day, your weapons were not as effective. Transportation of the lead was much heavier, etc., whereas the longbow was very effective. You could fire it quickly. It was silent. It was stealthy. And literally was a much better field weapon. You could, a soldier could carry 50 rounds in 50 arrows, and the English archers were able to defeat and manage the entire world through archery. And so Benjamin Franklin literally wanted archery to be the bows and arrows, longbows, to be the field weapon of choice for the early United States militia. At any rate, I'm about out of time here. Just remind you, go to the webpage, jmccsci.com. There is still a 10% sale on all the major water filter products, including my GF water filter elements. Nothing like them on the planet, made in the USA. Only the only product that you can on the market that's made in the USA with testing to NSF national standards. No add-ons required for anything, arsenic, fluoride, all taken out in the single filter element. No priming required. You don't have to pump water back through these to make them work. So go to the webpage, jmccsci.com. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.